Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage. You're listening to an encore segment of Michael Savage.
Do you actually have the same dark vision of the president that so many people are suddenly uttering? That this man planned the overthrow of Mubarak? That he actually wants a radical Muslim arising around the world? Do you actually believe that? Or do you believe that Obama's simply a Fabian socialist idealist who wanted to see democracy rise in these Middle Eastern dictatorships and that it simply blew up in his face because he was completely out of his league? Which side are you on? Mike in Indiana, welcome to the program.
Hi, Dr. Savage. I have a very beautiful vision for the future of America, sir.
Well, give it to us.
My vision is that in 20 years, I'll be able to walk through the streets of Manhattan and see Gail Collins from the New York Times or Maureen Dowd from the New York Times clad in a burqa following their Muslim husbands around. That's my vision. I want to see Frank Rich Muslim oppression. That's where we're going.
All right. Well, there's an awful lot of rage out there because a lot of people see what's going on. I can't comment on any of the comments because I don't agree with them, although it could happen. It can happen here with the pacifism and the liberalism and the drugs and the alcohol and the lack of knowledge of history. Anything is possible in America. And I think that the radical Muslims see their time is now. They don't really need an army. They don't really need an army, although they already have an army. Their armies have been let in under asylum laws, immigration laws, etc. I must tell you that when I see a woman walking in a full head covering from head to toe in America, I wince. I wince at how a nation can permit this throwback costume in the streets of America. I wince at how a nation that builds itself on the freedom of women and women's liberation can permit the enclosure of a woman within a prison. It's a prison imposed upon her by an overbearing, vicious husband who would put his wife in such a situation. And any country that is liberated would not permit this kind of outfit. France banned the burqa, by the way. You think we should ban the burqa? Of course we should. It should not be permitted. A head covering is another story. It would be the same thing as a man wearing a head covering going into a synagogue. You cover your head out of deference to God, but to wrap a woman up where only her eye slits show? And by the way, this should be offensive to women. All women should see this as a form of slavery. How could this be going on, I ask myself, with almost no outcry in America? Well, I know the answer. We've been beaten up for 30 years by liberalism, which has taught us to look the other way, even when for those of us who actually see it, we're afraid to say a word about it. But I'm afraid most people don't even see what's obvious to them. So I don't know whether God is behind all of this or not, and I don't know which side God is on, to be honest with you. I have mixed feelings about it. Sometimes I feel that this country has become so godless, so degenerate, so sick, that God has introduced radical Islam in order to either save us or kill us. I'm not sure. It's like a do-or-die situation. Either the radical Muslims will awaken us to who we are, what we once had, and what we've become, or we will disappear as a people altogether, a society, I should say. And I believe that it may be God's hand behind it at this point. It's the only way I can look at it and have some sense of peace about it all. Because when I cannot understand something from a social point of view, I have to go to a cosmic point of view. And let me repeat again what I'm thinking, just so you get it. I believe God's hand is behind this invasion of the West by radical Muslims. I believe God wanted us to see the weakness of liberalism and secularism and multiculturalism. And I then believe God insists that we either change our ways and either go back to God's word, go back to the church, go back to the temple, try our best, take one step forward in a more dignified, more godlike life, or we're going to lose our society completely, and that will be the end of civilization as we know it. We will descend into 1,000 years of darkness. That's my dark vision.
Savage.
I got that the genome thing back. What a ripoff. I sent the saliva in for $399. What a ripoff this is. I could read the company's name, but I don't really need to, you know, bash the company. I wouldn't recommend that you spit in the jar and send in $400 to find out what you're going to die from. I sent my saliva sample, and it took 3 months to get my genotyping analysis back. Folks, I have a PhD from the University of California in epidemiology and nutrition. I couldn't make heads or tails of it. Told me that you have a statistical chance of not getting breast cancer. That was what I got out of it. You have a statistical chance of not getting breast cancer, I learned. That was very important for $400. So I figured, all right, so let's see who I come from. I figured maybe it'll explain why I don't like the heat. Maybe I derive from Finns or somewhere, like Laplanders. You know, as a kid, I was always drawn to, like, northern Finland. I always liked, like, the yak. I liked the yak as an animal. And I liked the huts they lived in. I liked the idea of them on the ice, something near the Eskimo, but not exactly Eskimos. I never wanted to be an Eskimo. I wanted to be near the Eskimos. I liked the idea of the cold, dark winter, but I like a city with electric lights. So I figured Helsinki would work. So I was hoping that when I got the analysis back, it would say that you have some drop of Finnish blood. That at some point a Finnish warrior came into the village and, you know, had his way with one of your female ancestors. And that explains why you hate Florida. It didn't happen, though. I got it back. And my genotyping analysis kit came back. And there's nothing in it. I'm still searching for any bit of information. It says you have a statistical chance of not getting breast cancer. And I looked at other illnesses. It says you have a statistical chance of not getting this, but you have a high probability of getting that. My mother-in-law could have told me the same thing based upon what happened in the family. Who are these people fooling? And by the way, I'm going to look into it a little bit more. All I can say to you is don't go for that genotype thing on the web with where you put saliva in a jar and sit. You sit and wait like you are not going to die from you. It doesn't come back like that. And trust me, I know statistics well enough to know what probability is. You have a 1.2 chance of not getting breast cancer, but you have a 0.8 chance of getting colorectal experiences after taking vitamins. What does this mean? Please explain it to me. Who were my ancestors? Then you look at the bottom, you got the stalkers already on the page. ME90305060 wants to meet you. Already a stalker found that your blood type, your spit matched his spit already. He's looking to meet you. Are you crazy? Am I going to send my data to some lunatic who wants to meet me because of saliva in a jar? You know, this is getting crazier by the day. I personally think it's a government plot to get your genome on file so they can use it against you. Forget about iris technology. I think this is the government wanting to get your spit on file.
Savage.
Interesting story, an Iceman. They found an Iceman, a well-preserved 5,300-year-old mummy, sometimes lovingly called Frozen Frit. And he was recreated by Dutch forensic experts. And you know what's shocking is it looks like me after a bad night on the town. I swear to God. Artists recreate the face of Otzi, a 5,300-year-old Iceman mummy. This could explain my aversion to heat and to the tropics. Did you see that picture yet on my website? They say Ozzy was, yeah, according to Discovery News, Ozzy was about 5'3" tall. I'm taller than that, but that was a long time ago. He weighed 110 pounds, not bad, but they didn't have, you know, pasta in those days. A new model of him will go on display beginning March 1st to January 15th in the South Tyrol Museum of Archaeology in Bolzano, Italy. The body of the Iceman was discovered in 1991 by accident by German tourists and made headlines around the world. At first, he was thought to have died recently. Since then, the ancient mummy has undergone a slew of examination for which signs are gleaned. Bismuth, last steps are arranging from his last meal to the cause of his death. He probably ate in the Chinese restaurant that I ate in. The ancestors of the Chinese restaurant I ate in. The dim sum they fed me the other day would have knocked the mummy out. to knock down an Iceman 5,300 years ago. What are they putting in that stuff these days? The quality of food, particularly the mixed food that you disguise with sauces, has gone so downhill, it's frightening. Wherever I go, I'm talking about food for a minute. I slipped into it. I'm afraid now of restaurants where it's mumbo-jumbo food, which I've enjoyed for years, because the sauce is mainly China. You really want to eat shrimp from China? Do you really want to eat calamari from the fresh, clean waters off the coast of the South China Sea? How would you like? I mean, have you been reading what they're doing in China? That, what was it? The rice is contaminated coming out of China because the water they're using, the wetlands they use to grow rice, are polluted with industrial runoff. You know, I noticed at my local Japanese restaurant, which I've eaten in for years, the guy makes a nice meal, a cheap, quick, but I can't eat the rice. It smells. It has a weird smell, but he doesn't speak very good English, and they sold it to a new immigrant. He doesn't speak any English. So if I went in and nicely said, what's going on with your rice? It smells bad. He wouldn't understand me. So I have no way to even ask. Now, look, I could send the rice to a laboratory and see what lead, cadmium, mercury is in it, but I'm not going to bother. In my old days, if I didn't have a radio show, I would have been a real troublemaker. I would have sent the rice to, like, the state laboratory. I would have come back in 12 years, probably with the same obscure results as my spittle came back from the genealogy laboratory. Like, there's a high probability it would have said, we've done the studies in the state laboratory. We've discovered that we don't know anything, but if you look carefully enough, we cannot prove definitively one way or the other whether or not there is any increased risk of any heavy metals. On the other hand, we should not then forewarn you that if you do eat it, there's no probability that you might not, in some cases, even from dyspepsia all the way up, and therefore, thank you very much, send in your money so we can go on vacation and get our pensions. That would be what I get out of the state laboratory, so you can't use it. You have to use an independent laboratory. It costs me $5,000 to find out what's in the rice. Do you understand that? I don't want to do it. The state should be looking into the rice that smells. I should be able to call up the state of California and ask them, okay, Japanese restaurant I'm eating and the rice stinks. Since the new owners took over, I think it's contaminated with cadmium because it's being grown in China. We have some of the best rice in the world here in Northern California. Do we sell it in California? The Sikhs went into the rice business here 100 years ago. They grow beautiful organic rice in Northern California.
Savage.
Cheryl in Alabama, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hi, I want to make a comment about the protesters, that they're not very – they only protest people that they want to protest. There was one this morning that had a New York Yankees T-shirt on it. I don't see them protesting the million-dollar, get $50 million for a five-year contract. So aren't those considered rich people too?
Well, notice that they attacked Murdoch outside his mansion, even though he was out of the country. But they didn't attack Jeffrey Immelt of
right.
General Electric, because he controls MSNBC, the most feted channel in the history of the Soviet Union. How is that possible?
Right.
How should we take any of them seriously when they would go outside Murdoch's house when he's not even a banker, for example? He's only a rich man who happens to be a conservative, the owner of a conservative outlet called Fox News. Okay, so it's a targeted protest, not really about bankers, but against their favorite targets that the unions chose, by the way, in consort with Obama, who's at war with News Corporation. You know that.
No Britney Spears, no football players, nobody, those kind of people.
How about black billionaires, like the man who owns the Black Entertainment Network?
Exactly. So what we're supposed to take for them is that the 99% that they're supposedly representing, they're all the people that they spend, $120, $150 to go to a game. That
yeah.
They have money to do that. They all have cell phones. They all have
yeah.
clothes and sunglasses and the rest
That's
of that.
That's right. Of course. It's all rubbish, and America knows it. Come on. The only people are buying this garbage are the idiots in the media like Anderson Cooper and that breezy creature on MSNBC whose husband ran the Federal Reserve, Miss Breezy. I mean, if there was really a justice in this world, she'd be tried for crimes against humanity. If there was really justice, a people's court, Andrea Mitchell and her husband, whoever his name, what was his name? I keep forgetting his name. The guy with the big glasses. Alan Greenspan and Andrea Mitchell will be brought before a people's court. And the judge would say, all right, step before the court, please. All right, what's your name, Andrea Mitchell? Tell me what you did. You had a fake show on MSNBC where you held up your husband's policies in the Federal Reserve? Yes. All right. 1,000 years in Siberia. I mean, what do you think the punishment should be for what she's been doing?
Right.
Thanks for the call. I'm getting a sore throat already. Ah, here it is. I found it. What a long lobby that was. It's page 272. Jack and Sarah flew from London on a private charter, a Gulfstream G550, courtesy of Senator Harold Wickham. Although Jack had been reluctant to get the senator involved before, he knew he had no choice now but to bring him into this mess. Harold Wickham was a Texas oil man, a hardline hawk, who always put country first and politics last. Jack had met him several years before when he and two fellow senators were visiting Iraq's Green Zone while the search for WMDs was still ongoing. Jack had interviewed Wickham, blah, blah, blah. Off the record, however, Wickham confessed to Jack over a beer that he wasn't all that confident they ever would find the weapons. He had become convinced that the U.S. was either victim to sloppy intelligence or, more likely, that the WMDs had been quietly smuggled into Iran. Neither scenario made the senator happy. So, in other words, they became friends, right? And they're on the guy's jet. I'm not going to read you, you know, every word in here. And here we are. An hour later, Jack and Sarah boarded their flight. It was a Gulfstream 550 that Jack and Sarah had all to themselves, attended by a lone flight attendant. The young attendant explained that they had a choice of four separate living areas, each with its own climate control. There was a wireless broadband network and satellite communication should they require it. Abundant sunlight streamed through the 14 oval windows, illuminating the deep leather seats, each with its own DVD player. With brawny Rolls-Royce turbofan engines, this flying carpet had a range of 6,750 nautical miles nonstop and flew at 51,000 feet. Jack and Sarah just wanted a shower and change. There were a stack of boxes from Harrods on board. Jack slipped into slacks, a button-down shirt, and a black blazer. Sarah snuggled into a pantsuit. Jack was pleased that he'd guessed right when he gave the senator her size. She looked like a runway model, only more radiant. Unlike commercial aircraft, the air was 100% fresh. The sound levels were extremely low, and no sooner had they sat opposite one another on the sofas in the rear cabin than they were asleep. They slept for more than half the flight, then enjoyed a leisurely meal from one of London's best restaurants. The ultra-long-range jet took them directly to a private terminal adjacent to San Francisco International. They arrived in the late afternoon and found a limousine waiting for them at the bottom of the steps, a chauffeur standing with the rear passenger door open. "Welcome back, Mr. Hatfield. Senator Wickham is looking forward to seeing you." And so they get in the car, and Jack looked at Sarah, then glanced into the rear of the limo. "He's not here." "He had another engagement," the driver said. "You'll be meeting him there." "Where?" The driver smiled. "At the dog show. I'll be right back."
Savage.
You're listening to an encore segment of Michael Savage.
You don't know what tonight's going to bring, let alone tomorrow. I mean, we make plans. Sure, we plan. Everyone thinks they're going to live a ripe old age. They're going to be surrounded. They're going to get a little ill, not totally ill, not very badly ill, not never cancer, no heart attack. Nothing like that. That happens to other people. They're just going to slowly slow down, and oh, they're going to wind up sitting quietly in a resort somewhere, a resort-like retirement community. They'll be able to take care of themselves right to the end, and they'll be surrounded by loving friends and family, and they will die in their sleep at approximately 99 years of age. It happens perhaps one out of a billion. I don't know what the number is now. Maybe one out of 500 million. Might go that way, or one out of 300 million. I don't really have the numbers, but it's not happening to you, Johnson. More likely, it will be a horrendous slow death, either from cancer or some other debilitating disease, or even worse yet, Alzheimer's disease, where you're left for hours at a time in a nursing home in a corner, staring at a curtain, unable to move and not knowing who you are, where an orderly will beat you about the head and neck slowly with something hides the blunt trauma and steals the small change that your adult son or daughter brings you. So, you know, given that that's the fact of reality here, and I'm in a long day's journey in tonight mood, which I've been in since I'm about 16 years old, but particularly now, I'm not sad, I'm not agitated, I'm just affected by this because, you know, look, the Grim Reaper comes around and he gets closer and closer, and you see him circling, and you start saying, "There we go again," you know. And so what is it that you want to do with the rest of your life? You have to ask yourself, if you're a driven man as I am, and I've been driven all my life, let me tell you right now, this is nothing new to me. I've been driven from very early on to do things in my life. And I'm no saint. Don't confuse me with trying to tell you I'm such a saint. I'm not Al Gore, okay? I'm none of those people. I'm just like you. Maybe I'm a little luckier and maybe I'm a little more hardworking than some people, but I'm not different than the average intelligent person out there in some ways. In some ways, I'm a genius. In some ways, I'm a big idiot. I understand all of that. That's the human being. But I have a gift. There's no question I have a gift in radio. It's probably inherent. It's innate. Nobody taught me how to do radio, and look where I am after 13 years. I'm in the winner's circle, just where I knew I would be. Now, I could spend the next number of years just trying to get to number one, the number one slot. I could do that if I wanted, and I could probably win. I mean, I could change my time slot and go right up against Rush, and I'm telling you, Rush wouldn't stand the chance. In 1 year, he wouldn't be number one. I would be number one. But I don't have such a desire. It doesn't mean anything to me. It has no meaning to me, none whatsoever. I've always seen the big picture. I've always seen the longer picture. There's very little that I want for materially. I only want my health and the health of my children, to be honest with you. But then I say, well, what about my poor country? What good is all of this health? What good is a reasonable success if the have-nots are being brought in by the tens of millions, and if the have-nots are being told that they can take from those who have created it by these evildoers in the Democrat Party? There's nothing to work for. They'll take it all away from your inheritors. They will not inherit Jack Johnson. They'll give it away to the bums who didn't work for it. And that motivates millions of people like me. Let me tell you right now, illegitimi non carborundum. We don't want the illegitimate taking away our livelihood, and we don't want the illegitimate stealing from us any more of our damn tax money. Here in the state of California, we pay not only federal tax, we pay 10% of our income as state income tax. 10% right off the top. But wait, there's a bigger insult. Last year, while you slept, they added another tax for people in a slightly higher bracket in the state of California of an additional 1% called a mental health tax. So that's 11%. Now, what the heck is a mental health tax? Where does the money go? Well, you say, well, it goes for mental health. No, it probably goes to gray-bearded child molesters so they can write papers and go to cons where the extra 1% goes. I can guarantee you it doesn't go anywhere else. And where will it end? Nobody knows where it'll end. So these are the things that are agitating me. And I read you the opener, how long do we have? And that the Athenian Republic lasted not very long. But that in 1787, Alexander Tyler, a Scottish history professor, said a democracy is always temporary in nature. It simply cannot exist as a permanent form of government, because a democracy will exist up until the time that voters discover that they can vote themselves generous gifts from the public treasury. And that's Hillary Clinton. That's the invented man called Obama. That's the Biden, that's the Edwards mentality, which is to live like commissars in the ex-Soviet Union and tell you that they're for the people. They are absolute Bolsheviks. They're right out of the Communist Party USA with a slight differential, believe me, and not a great one at that. So that's what I was thinking about. So now let me go a little bit more here of where I'm coming from and how I got there. In my neighborhood, I had seen a 57 Eldorado for a while in a garage. I know you're saying, how the heck did he jump to there? Well, watch where I'm going, and you'll see I'll come back to where I started from. And I had seen, so I inquired from a neighbor's neighbor, is it for sale, blah, blah, blah. So I went and looked at it yesterday. It's a 57 Eldorado, totally restored frame up, really nice car. I have a 65 Caddy convertible. I have a weakness for 60s and 50s cars that are perfect. I don't really have the place to put it, but I looked at it, we talked, and this gentleman's from Sweden, very nice man, and before long we started talking about the Muslim attempt to take over Sweden. I said, how did you Vikings let this happen to you? He said, we were too tolerant. He said, they came in asking for asylum, and we woke up, we can't even go into some cities. And he said, don't even get my mother started. My mother is vehement on this issue, that if we don't crack down on them and deport these imams, we're going to lose Sweden. And on and on and on. And I said, well, look at the illegal aliens in America. I said, Ted Kennedy is working around the clock to grant amnesty to 30 million illegal aliens, which will be the death of the United States of America as we know it. It will be over. It will be over. As far as I'm concerned, it's a declaration of war against our sovereignty. To me, it's a declaration of war against the people. I don't know how else to put it. What do you think? I like saying this? You think I don't know I'm putting myself in danger? I'm nobody. But I'm not alone. Tens of millions of you understand what's at stake. You don't want the illegal aliens to be granted amnesty. You know what that'll do to this country. You know it'll give them the right to bring in 5, 10, as many relatives as they want. Within 5 years, you'll be living in Tijuana with all of the horrendous problems of Mexico on a street corner near you. And if you want to live in Mexico, then I suggest you go live in Mexico. But for God's sakes, don't make this great nation into that corrupt socialist dictatorship called Mexico. And so having churned all of this over the weekend, I woke up at 3:30 in the morning. I couldn't sleep because of the mortality thing and the this and the that. And I started to add it up, and I said to myself, I'm leveling with you like I'm talking with you in a bar. And this is one of the things I can do very well. And you listen because it's like a guy talking to you from the heart and from real. So I know you're listening, those of you who want to listen. And those who don't, well, I can't help you. If you want to hear a regular, this is the Savage Nation, and we'll be talking. I'm not going to do that. There are other people who do that very well. This is much different. It's conversational, and it's based upon the reality of the man doing the show. So you'll go along with me. And I need a break coming up. But let me start with this. I said, did you add up the decades of your life? Now, look at where you were from like age 11 to 21. Look at the change in your life in those 10 years. I said 11 to 21 was one of the most dramatic. You can't even do that lump. That's too big. Because at that age, 11 to 15 is already a change in your life unlike perhaps any you're ever going to experience.
Yeah, I keep a checklist in my drawer of my campaign promises. About once a week, I take it out and make a little check. And we've gotten about 60% done so far in 3 years. But I need another 5 to get the other 40% done.
Did you hear that? And it's organizations like the AARP who control these leftist politicians. AMAC is fighting back. The Association of Mature American Citizens. Your membership can help stop the left wing. Call 800-255-4199, 800-255-4199, or go to AmericaIsRising.com, 800-255-4199, AmericaIsRising.com.
Savage.
Talk radio is still dominant in terms of the world of political ideas in this country. I did it on this show. It was done nowhere else. We kept hearing talk radio is this, talk radio is that. It's only for old people. Talk radio is dead. Cable news is king. Internet is king. I don't say they don't have a powerful influence. You got to be a fool not to say so. At this stage, though, you'd have to admit, no matter how much of a doubting Thomas you are, that Michael Savage has rescued talk radio from the gallows. Talk Radio Network, an independent syndicator. I work with the best team in talk radio. They know me. They're like my friends, all the guys in the back room. It's unbelievable to me. This is a family. This is a team. We are the Yankees of talk radio. If anyone out there has been doubting whether talk radio still is powerful, let me tell you something. It is more powerful today than it ever has been in my 16-year career. Much more powerful today. More listeners than ever. More influence than ever. That's if you're in the inner ring. If you're in the inner ring, you have an audience that needs you and listens to you. And if you make sense, well, you're gonna make a lot of friends and a lot of unhappy people too. I wouldn't use the word enemies because we don't yet live in North Korea.
Savage.
Let me read you something I really enjoyed writing, because I don't want to talk about the protesters for another few. I can't take it anymore. I think that these hippie trust fund brats will be going home shortly, and mommy can give them a nice hot meal, and then, you know, they can go on to the next protest that they're told to go to by the unions that they don't work for. At least the union thugs get paid for it. These idiots don't even get paid for it. All right, let me take a call, a political call. Portland, Oregon. Jay, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Thanks, Doctor. Appreciate it very much. I got to give you dual props. You were one of the first to talk about sneaking Iranian forces or stealth types in Mexico, and you'd been warning about that, and sure enough, there's stories on that.
Oh, you mean the Iranians who are shaving off their beards and looking like Mexicans, changing their names with fake IDs to come across the border? They don't even need IDs. with help from Eric Holder, they're ushered in with the help of the Border Patrol.
Well, my other comment, too, along those lines is with those weapons supposedly from Eric Holder's approval that went down to supposedly fight off the cartel, and I'm wondering how much longer do you think Eric Holder can stay in office at this point?
Oh, at least through several more administrations of Obama. I think Obama will be president for life, and Holder will be a very old man before they get him out of office, because since he is so corrupt, he's immune to any rule of law. See, you're asking a question that has a dual meaning to it. If we were living in a nation that was run by law-abiding citizens and a law-abiding administration, there's no question Holder would be indicted for what he's done with Fast and Furious, along with many other scandals, incidentally. But the fact of the matter is, these people are above the law, therefore the law cannot touch them. Does that answer your question?
It answers my question, and it just...
No, I'm trying to be sturdy about it. It's not easy. I'll send you a free copy of Abuse of Power. Read it before it's banned in Portland. Shall I read you from Abuse of Power? Yes. Page 275, Dog Show. So he goes to the dog show. Jack had been to the Cow Palace many times in his life. A large indoor arena. The palace had been lost over the years to the San Francisco Warriors, host over the years, the San Jose Sharks, numerous rock concerts, wrestling events, two Republican national conventions, and a number of livestock exhibitions, including the Horse and Stock Show and the Grand National Rodeo. I'm talking about the Cow Palace in San Francisco. And he remembers going there when he was a child to a watch and clock exhibition, right? So he's going to a dog show, and he is looking for the senator. And I actually went to this dog show last year while I was writing it, and this comes directly from my visit, okay? When they entered, Jack and Sarah were guided by an usher toward a section near the arena floor. On the floor itself, men in blazers and women in conservative suits led dogs on leashes around a cordoned-off area as the judges carefully eyeballed them and the audience applauded. This was an all-breed conformation show, and there were a variety of purebreds in competition, including poodles, Irish wolfhounds, Boykin spaniels, German wire-haired pointers, Great Danes, mastiffs, Rottweilers, from large to small, fluffy to nearly hairless, all magnificent in their own way, the best of the best on display. An Irish wolfhound caught Jack's attention, a breed he had always admired for its beauty and fearlessness. They were known to hunt wolves in packs. There were also Turkish sheepdogs. Their gigantic spiked iron anti-wolf collars displayed beside them as they got to their feet. These Anatolian shepherd dogs hid among the sheep, giving an attacking wolf a huge surprise when they bit into their iron collars. Jack had long been a dog lover, and seeing a gray poodle parade proudly across the floor made him instantly miss Eddie. But he knew the little guy was in good hands with Tony, and he'd be home soon enough to greet him. I'll pause right now. I'm reading from the greatest novel of its time. I would call it a political novel, but it's really a thriller, Abuse of Power. Because I could see how good this is as I read it now. It's actually so good that I'm enjoying reading it. And I got to tell you, this thing about the dog show is very good. I was there last January. I love the dog show. I had to leave early because the smell got to me. I couldn't take it.
Savage.
Now that I've covered that, we can go to the other shocking news under this incompetent criminal administration. There was a courthouse break-in in Texas. Five Moroccan men, French-Moroccan Muslims, were on a road trip in a rented RV, and they arrested inside a courthouse in the middle of the night. The men crawled through a window. They got into the old courthouse, and then they were arrested. They tripped a burglar alarm. So the officials found photographs of shopping malls, water systems, courthouses, and other public buildings, which they say were taken as tourists inside their van. They found these inside their van. Now the question is, wouldn't you think that these five French Moroccans should be arrested on suspicion of terrorism? Of course, but you're not Janet Napolitano. You don't know how Janet Napolitano thinks. The FBI Immigration and Customs Enforcement and the Joint Terrorism Task Force is interrogating them, probably asking them what they like for halal meal and things of that nature. But there's an immediate press release that this is not related to terrorism. Now, a few blocks away from this courthouse, where the French-Moroccan Muslims broke in, there was a military intelligence convention underway at the city's convention center, with top U.S. intelligence officials, including White House officials, set to speak. But so-called investigators didn't say whether the courthouse break-in by French, Moroccan Muslims had anything to do with the convention going on. But nevertheless, you should rest tonight knowing that there's no terror link. Even though there were pictures of water systems from around the U.S. found in the van used by five men said to be Moroccan Muslims, the U.S. government immediately said there is no terror link whatsoever. Now, what if it was five skinheads who had broken into the courthouse and had pictures of infrastructure, sewer pipes, and whatnot? Do you think that Janet Napolitano would have said there's no terror link? Don't even call me. You know the answer. You know the answer when you have an upside-down, topsy-turvy world run by an imposter. He selects imposters. He selects people who are anti-American from the top to the bottom. So everything that you see is upside down in the world that you live in. Now you have a president taking the side of street vermin. Now you have a story coming out that the average federal employee makes $126,000 a year. That the D.C. area tops the income in the United States, with the average federal employee making $126,000 a year. You hear this? Texas officials say that the break-in was not terror-related. On the same day, a passenger, an Iranian, yells, "You're all going to die, Allahu Akbar," tries to break into the cockpit. He is arrested by a off-duty Navy person, not by anyone from the TSA or not anybody in the air marshal business, because they were probably in the back discussing their pensions. I would think that if there was an air marshal aboard with a TSA agent, they were in the back analyzing either how to sue the government or checking out their pensions should they actually have to jump out of the seat and get off their fat behinds and twist an ankle. So instead, another civilian had to stop another Allahu Akbar personality from breaking into the cockpit. Again, we are being told by Janet Napolitano that this is not terror-related. But if it was a white supremacist or a skinhead, of course you know what the answer would be.
Savage. Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage. You're listening to an encore segment of Michael Savage.
I'll tell you what I want to do as a special treat to my listeners, those loyalists who listen every day for wonderful programming like this. Remember I was talking about the life coach thing a little earlier? That it's a new trend for people who become life coaches and you don't need a credential. And if you have like a crisis or a question, you don't know who to turn to. Okay, I'm going to be Dr. Michael Savage, unlicensed life coach. And you could call 1-800-449-8255 with your question. Whatever it is, boyfriend, girlfriend, mother, father, child, travel you don't want to take, travel you do want to take, something that you want an answer to. So make believe that you're not on the radio when you call. Make believe you're calling a private number and you're paying for it. And you're going to get thousands of dollars of advice absolutely free right here on the Savage Nation if you're lucky enough to be cut through the call screener. It's got to be a legitimate question. Try not to make it too comedic. Leave the jokes to me, okay? Rooney in New York on WOR. Go ahead, please.
Dr. Savage.
Yes.
I wanted to thank you for bringing up the topic of coaching. I've been making my career in that field for many years on the business coaching side.
Interesting. Rooney, how much do you charge an hour?
Well, usually I work by the task, but hourly rates go anywhere from $185 to $450.
And what do? You take a 15-minute minimum like a lawyer?
Yes.
I spoke with a woman who expressed to me that there are people making a lot of money as unlicensed therapists by calling themselves coaches. And there's a huge void of, there's a huge need for this, apparently, in that people aren't going so much to hear what their psychological problems are as to get advice in their life, such as what to do with a job or what to do with a relationship or what to do with regard to, anything that comes up in a human life. And they don't have anyone to turn to. They may not have a father figure. They may not have a brother they can turn to, a husband, a lover. The male figure is gone, and I'm talking from a male perspective. I'm sure there are women doing very well in this. But the male coach, the male life coach, is an interesting phenomenon. How do you build a practice? I could do it overnight because I have a radio show. I don't want to do it. But on the other hand, it's an interesting concept. So I said that I'm going to let you have thousands of dollars worth of information for free. I'm going to play life coach, see how I do, and see if I give you advice worthwhile. So now make believe you're calling an 800 number, and you've paid your cost to whoever answers, whatever my fee might be. It would be very expensive, I'm sure, as much as any attorney gets, if not more. And I'm going to give you advice. I'm a life coach now, Michael Savage Life Coach. So let us begin with any caller. I mean, I have tremendous callers here. It's a fascinating interest, what's going on here, by the way. Spokane, Washington. D, go ahead, please. You're on the Savage Nation.
Yes, I'm 45, and I have been working as a nanny for the last 10 years and to put my daughter through college and private school. And now she's about ready to graduate, and then my son is going to go to college, but he's getting a scholarship. So I was interested in maybe going back to school, but I don't know, with the recession, do you think at my age, I don't know, I just need advice.
All right, well, that's an interesting question. How old are you?
I'm 45.
And you've been a nanny for 10 straight years?
Yes.
And when you say nanny, you mean for children? Because there are nannies who take care of older people now. I want to define carefully what you mean by that.
For children. There's three children, and they're...
All right. It's a very interesting question. Are you an American citizen?
Yes.
And may I ask you how much you're earning as a nanny?
Like $24,000 a year.
After 10 years. Okay, you're not making a lot of money. I think they're underpaying you, by the way. A manual laborer in San Francisco makes more money off the books than you're making, which is an embarrassment and an insult to this country. Manual workers doing ditch digging here make $20 an hour. Illegal aliens are getting $15 to $20 an hour in this city. So I can understand why you're thinking about it. However, going back to school is a long road. You're not going to make any money while you're in school. And there's no guarantee there's anything waiting for you when you come out. However, you are an expert in child care now. That's what you're an expert in, correct?
Yes, but I don't really want to go into that. My interests are interior design, photography, and stuff like that.
All right, here's a big thing. Don't confuse an avocation with a vocation. This is a common mistake that people make. In other words, in America, in the heyday, when everybody could do anything they wanted and make a living, the advice was follow your loves, follow what you like, and you know the world will follow. It's not true anymore. The chances of you making money as an interior designer or a photographer are very low because these fields are filled with very talented people who have been around a long time who are suffering right now as a result of the downturn in the economy, and they're not making a living themselves. You can do those things as a hobby. I would not recommend you do them as a career. If you want to make more money, I would stick to what you know best, which is child care. So in other words, I'm not telling you to leave your field. I'm telling you to work smarter. Don't just be a nanny for a family. Why don't you set up a child care facility and get other children into the child care facility and then hire people to work for you in this child care facility so you become an owner, manager, boss. You know what I'm saying?
Right, yes.
That would be my advice, and I can't give you any further advice at that point. Denver, Colorado, this is Michael Savage, Life Coach. Joe, welcome to the program. What's your question?
Yeah, hi, Michael. I've been doing some painting last maybe 10 years, artist kind of painting, and since my dog died, I've lost that kind of creative desire. I still want to, but like there's this like emptiness.
Yeah.
So I'm not really pursuing it very much. There's a desire, but there's no real no motivation.
But when your dog was alive, your dog was your only inspiration for your painting?
Well, no, he filled a real void. So when
The logical answer is get another dog. I mean, you know, it's like saying it's not going to be the same, but eventually you'll bond with that animal and you'll come to love that other animal. And maybe this spark of desire to live again will come back. You are grieving. You are in bereavement, the same as if a person loses a friend or a parent or a child, God forbid, or a mate. You're going through the same exact grieving process. This is why you're not painting anymore.
Right, but you don't get another kid or another parent. It's kind of like...
I understand that, but listen, you can't just get another kid or another parent, but you can get another dog. That dog is gone. That dog is in another world. And all of the crying and all of the what you're doing over the dog is not doing you any good, is it?
No, because I've kind of been drinking a little bit.
Well, all right, so you're drinking. There's no shame in that either. I mean, alcohol was discovered for a reason. But there's a limit to that, okay? You need to get a dog in your life if that's what you love. I mean, is a dog what you love? Dog was what you loved?
Well, it was this particular dog.
I understand, but there's not going to be the same dog, but there's going to be some other animal that's going to come in your life if you like animals. So what kind of dog was it?
He was a beagle-foxhound mix.
But, Joe, if you go to a local pound where they're euthanizing animals every day, beautiful little animals, beautiful little friends, waiting for someone to just take them in and do anything for them, all they want is your love, Joe. You're going to find a dog that might look like the one you had. And, of course, at first it's going to be strange. It's like coming home with a new girlfriend. I mean, you know, you can't suddenly fall in love with someone because she's a girl. You have to have a relationship with that individual. It's the same with an animal. You'll build it up. You know, you take him for a walk. You give him food. You throw him a bone. You throw him a toy. You rub him a little bit. And before long, you're creating a bond with that animal, Joe, and you're going to have the same feelings again. Again, that's the only advice I can give you at this time. How's my driving? Call 1-800-SAVAGE. No, I'm very good at this. I know it. I'm like the uncle of the nation. I know that. Everyone knows that I know what I'm talking about. They can tell by my political analysis that I'm right. And as far as life analysis, I'm giving you advice through the airwaves, okay? So where do I have the audacity to tell you that I know what would be best for you? It comes from the feeling that there's common sense in the world, and there's a lack of common sense in the world. And I believe that I have been gifted with common sense. It was ingrained in me. It was taught to me. My father was a very commonsensical man. He taught me how to think for myself. And I've learned, I believe, what is, I would call, commonsensical solutions to problems. Okay? So that's all I'm going to say. If you like my advice, call the number.
Savage.
The Savage Nation. Take a virtual tour down the world of therapy. I've dimmed the lights, put up the jazz music, hung out my shingle, and now I'm playing Life Coach. Cost you nothing. Thousands of dollars of information. I'm just trying this out. I'm trying this hat on. I actually enjoy it. I find it to be a lot of fun. And I'll tell you, in addition to being helpful, I find that I can launch into a political discussion right off talking with one of my callers about their life problem, if it works, you know, if it fits. So let's go to the callers now. New York City, WOR, June. You are on the Savage Nation. June, what's on your mind?
Last year, my mother passed away, and she left me some money, and my sister stole $40,000 from a bank account that she didn't think I knew about. Mm. And she also stole the ring that was promised to my daughter for 30 years.
Mm.
And she took all the family pictures.
Oh, boy.
and I feel like I need therapy from, it's such a betrayal.
But now, how well did you get along with this sister prior to this discovery of her theft?
That's why it's such a betrayal.
What, you're saying you were very close with her?
Yes, yes.
But when your mother died, the true, let's say the greedy side of her emerged, is that it?
The what? The greedy side of my sister?
Yes.
Yes, definitely.
Now, was she a poor woman? Was she in desperate straits?
My sister? She does have financial problems, but no, not
who, in... Who was more better off, you or her, financially? Okay. At the time of your mother's death, who was better off, you or your sister?
Equal.
Equal. So you're both struggling, in other words, and it should have been split.
Exactly, and that's the way my mother wanted it.
But what did your mother's will say?
My mother said she made a will, and then my sister swore up and down that there wasn't any.
Well, where is the will? Do you have a copy of your mother's will or no?
My sister said she went with my mother at one time to make out a will, and then when I confronted her with the will, she swore up and down that I'm crazy. There wasn't any will.
Oh. Well, it's a tough problem without a will. If you have a crook for a sister, the only recourse you would have would be a legal action against her, but that's going to cost you money. And there's no guarantee of a recovery in that regard. What are you going to go on? On what basis are you going to prove that your mother wanted you to have half the money or that she wanted you to have her ring? What proof do you have to that, to those statements?
Mm-hmm.
Do you have any proof? Are there any third parties who would testify that those were your mother's wishes?
Well, there are my nephews, but they're siding with my sister.
Oh, there you go. And what are they? The nephews are, of course, your sister's sons?
Yes.
All right. So already you have the family lined up around the money. You know, you're not, the only thing I can tell you is you're not alone. I know other families over a few pieces of silverware, that they're breaking up over silverware. Can you believe it?
No, because I can't even believe this.
Well, I think the big thing here is your heartbreak rather than the loss of money. Is that correct?
Absolutely.
Okay, the loss of a sister is bigger to you than the loss of the money, right?
Oh, yeah, and my
nephew. All right, so what I would say to you is work on that part of the quotient rather than the money per se. Because you may never see the money, but you may be able to understand that your sister never was who you thought she was, or the worst of her came out when your mother died. And you're going to have to say to yourself, your sister died when your mother died.
And today, in this John Harwood interview, he's babbling incoherently, and I mean incoherently, about Barack Obama's grades. Well, they published my grades. Why haven't that just has nothing to do with anything,
Rick. Norman Cain.
Wake up. Focus.
You know what?
This guy is a Bush League amateur playing on a very big stage.
Come on, that's ridiculous. But identity theft is something you have to take seriously. What if someone stole your credit cards and tried to destroy your life? Don't be a victim. Call my advertiser, LifeLock, today. Call LifeLock now at 1-800-LOCK-485 and get 60 risk-free days just for Savage listeners. 1-800-LOCK-485. Call them now.
Savage.
Although the midstream media has been claiming for years now that talk radio is dead, that the empty skirts who have been saying that this is a medium only for fringe extremists or old men, that talk radio is only for old men, I've proven them all wrong. Mark Masters, Talk Radio Network, and Michael Savage are partners. We've been in business together since when, 2000? Now, we all hear that the Internet is the king, and a lot of people ran to the Internet with their advertising money. Yet everyone knows that no one's been able to monetize their investment in the Internet. Nobody. You see, talk radio is a medium that you can't hide yourself easily in. You can't hide behind a mustache and such. 3 hours a day, Jerry. 3 hours a day, Jerry. Mr. Mustache on Fox. And unless you have a massive production staff who is talking for you, you're not going to get very far, right? But I don't have a massive staff. I have a very small and very good staff. And when you do talk radio right, people get to know you. People get to understand that you're a real person and they relate to you. What I'm saying is I've proven that talk radio is a very vibrant medium today. People who listen to talk radio are more acutely aware of what's going on than the average American. Although the fraudulent elites, or shall I say the self-proclaimed drug addicts with microphones and cameras in front of their faces, laugh at you, The average listener to talk radio is far more knowledgeable politically than they would like you to believe.
Savage.
You're listening to an encore segment of Michael Savage.
The heart transplant, where are they getting them from? Poor people in accidents. Remember the movies in the 80s, flying them in with the helicopter, with the ice? There were a lot of novels about that. I'm not putting that in my novel, but the flying in the heart, in the ice. That was very exciting. It was like a Steven Seagal, pre-Steven Seagal movies. Remember those movies in Chicago? Like, oh, they were so good. So unbelievable. I watched them. They were so, I could never get away with writing a book like that today. Awful. Where is Steven Seagal? Man, did he pack on weight. Did you see what he looks like? I'm sure he could still whip my behind. I know that. I'm not saying it, but man, the guy went from like Mr. Handsome, long, lanky, big arms, could knock you, right? Threw guys around. Okay. But he knew his stuff. He was real, apparently, to guys in the martial arts. But you look at this guy today. How did he get so fat? Like a distortion. Another guy came out. Another one looked like that after a while. Who was the other one who shocked me in the end? Remember Marlon Brando? It was a handsome young guy in the 50s, the Wild Ones. Handsome guy, motorcycle. The next thing you know, he's on Larry King with a toothpick with his shoes off. I'll never forget that as long as I live. With his naked feet up in front of the camera, goofing on Larry King, who has to kiss his behind for the interview. And Marlon Brando was doing everything he wants to insult him in the audience, which I thought was amazing. But did you see how bloated he looked? Jerry Lewis, another one. But Jerry Lewis, you could write it off because of the prednisone from his illness. Okay, that you can't laugh at. But the indulgence for a person to wind up that fat, my God. How does Steven Seagal get that way? Does anyone know what happened to him? How did he get that way? I don't understand it. Another guy who's kind of sad, I don't mean anything derogatory. Again, he could kick me all over the... he was very big in the 80s, and he's like a good conservative right-winger, but you know what? Shouldn't you just leave the arena at that point? You want to still be seen? It's like a beautiful movie star, a woman. You know, you look at her in her early movies, like Humphrey Bogart, Laura McCall, remember? Stunningly beautiful woman. Do you want to wind up like Martha Ray selling like teeth in a glass that fizzes? They wind up selling like tooth powder to make ends meet for the little house left in Beverly Hills that cost them $14,000 when they bought it in 1951. But they still can't make the taxes. So they got to do commercials. They're like the glasses and their teeth in a glass fizzing next to the bed. You don't want to see them at that point. There should be welfare for them. I mean, I'd contribute to a fund not to have them come out on the public stage. There should be a special fund for old actresses who are decent people, so they don't have to perform like commercials, do commercials, so I don't have to look at them. I don't want to see them like that. The same thing with, like, you know, Class A action stars years later. I don't want to see Steven Seagal looking like that. Like Chuck Norris, certifiably good guy, but Chuck, please. It's enough already. You know, and they do suffer from the years of kicking and hitting and striking. Their joints go from that. Yeah, you can only do it so long. There is no longevity in that form of activity, incidentally. Now, you compare a guy like me who's ridden the bicycle all of his life, and moderately now, I'm not talking triathlete level, everyday moderate till the body's warm and a little heated up, slight incline, almost every day of my life, never miss it. I miss it, I don't feel good. Like a religion, and push-ups and sit-ups. No sit-ups, I can't stand them. I don't care about the abs, I don't care. I'll do weightlifting a little bit, little dumbbells, that's all I can take. Push-ups and bicycling. What I'm saying is, if you were to compare a guy like me who was not striking bags and kicking for 40 years, I will bet you that my joints are in better shape. Which is to say what? They shouldn't have done it? No, they did it. But you got to pay the piper. Whatever you do, you're going to pay the piper. You see, there's no winning. Whoever set this game up, I don't know, there may be a little bit of sadism up there because something's wrong with the whole picture. No matter what you do, you suffer in the end like you can't believe. I don't care how much you run. I don't care how much you look at the watch. I don't care how many vitamins you take. I don't care if you eat vegetarian. I don't care if you do 1,000. I don't care what. In the end, it's not good. It's never good. You think you're going to die at 120 in your bed with your family surrounding you. Let me tell you, Buster, I got news for you. No doubt if you're lucky enough not to die of a stroke or a heart attack suddenly, and you live into your late 70s or 80s, if you will suffer the last 10 years of your life horribly, and then in the end your family will put you into a home somewhere where you will be abused by the immigrant staff, and they will beat you about the head and neck with rubber truncheons while stealing your small change before the family comes to visit. You'll be left in front of a curtain, drooling on yourself in a wheelchair. It's horrible. You know what I'm doing for you today? I'm entertaining you. Come on, give me a break. What are you calling some organization already that I insulted somebody in an old age home? Already some idiot liberal already dialing. There's a rumor going around radio that there are people calling into certain shows that are paid to do so. Now, I'm going to show you right now, first of all, before I start this discussion, that I do not, nor does my syndicator, pay anybody to call my show to pretend that they're calling in to, create any startling kind of reactions. But we learned that there actually are people who are hired as actors who are auditioning for a company called Premier On Call, and then they join a roster of ready-to-work actors, and they're paid $40 an hour, and they call in, allegedly, some real great shows out there, such as Rush Limbaugh, Glenn Beck, and Sean Hannity, allegedly. Now, I can't believe this is true, so we looked into this. We know that the people who are putting out the story are left-wing fanatics. This story that, you know what I'm talking about yet? Ladies and gentlemen, let's start from the top. This is the Savage Nation. We are talking about an alleged scandal that some of the top conservative shows in radio, or they're all top, all the shows in radio that are top are conservative. You got Rush number one, Hannity number two because he filled in for him, and the wall banger, got lucky. And then I'm number three. And then, of course, the hemorrhoid, we know where he's going, Mr. Blackboard. But the fact is, I don't use callers, that I pay for. But the question is, if this is true, where did this originate from? So we looked into this story, and it turns out that Premier Radio does have an audition request form online, and you could fill it out with your voice information. Please describe your voice, include local or native accent. Adjectives might include gruff, light, clean, crisp, high, deep, textured. And then you request an audition to audition for Premier Radio. And then if you pass, you get paid to call Rush Limbaugh, allegedly, and Wallbanger, and whichever question they give you. Well, here's what they say. It says, Premier On Call is our new custom caller service. We supply voice talent to make your on-air calls, improvise your scenes, or deliver your scripts. Using our simple online booking tool, blah, 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 especially the kind of voice you need. And unless you request it, you won't hear the same voice again for at least 2 months, ensuring the authenticity of your programming for avid listeners. So if this is true, this is quite scandalous. Michael Harrison, the editor of Talkers magazine. Talkers is the talk radio world's leading trade publication. So Harrison of Talkers said he knew nothing of this particular service, but was not altogether surprised to hear that it was in place. There was, he said, a tradition of creating fake phone calls for the sake of entertainment on some of the funny shows, shock jock shows, in other words, blah, blah, blah. In other words, like a Howard Stern show. So we looked into the people putting out this rumor, and it came originally from a so-called Jewish website called Tablet. And whenever I hear a website, a Jewish website, I know right away it's usually a left-wing fanatic. And we looked into this grunt. Sure enough, the contributors to this website that put out this story about fake callers are all left-wing fanatics. You've got Victor Navasky, who was once a publisher of The Nation magazine, which is a communist publication, and he's now publisher emeritus, so that fits. The author of the article is Leil Leibovitz, and this man apparently spends more time playing video games than he does drinking coffee. So in other words, you've got left-wing fanatics attacking the conservatives again.
Savage.
At the risk of your displeasure, audience of the Savage Nation, yes, at the risk of your displeasure, I must go deeper than the surface of the news stories I must drill down 5,000 years into the bedrock of Western civilization and see what the, well, let us say the Book of Books, the holiest book, the so-called Old Testament, the Jewish Bible, has to say about this situation. And I searched far and wide, and guess what I found? Something you haven't heard yet. Oh, you've all heard Ezekiel, you've heard Isaiah, you've heard Joshua, you've heard Ecclesiastes. Did you know Barak is in the Bible? It's in Judges. I found it. See, him and Deborah work together. Him and Deborah, Barak and Deborah work together, and I'll read it to you and see what this, see if this means anything to you. Barak, the son of Abinoam, was gone up to the Mount Tabor, and Sisera gathered together all his chariots, even 900 chariots of iron, and all the people that were with him, from Harashim Goyim into the brook Kishon, unto the brook Kishon. And Deborah said unto Barak, up, for this is the day in which the Lord hath delivered Sisera into thy hand. Is not the Lord gone out before thee? So Barak went down from Mount Tabor, and 10,000 men after him. And the Lord discomfited Sisera, and all his chariots, and all his host, with the edge of the sword before Barak. And you can read it yourself. The bottom line is that Barak, although we were told means peace in Hebrew, Barak was a warrior, incidentally. You should know that Barak was a warrior, as were all the prophets. None of the prophets were peaceniks. You see, there was no marijuana in those days. There were no communist camps for children in the Poconos back in the old desert days. And so all of the prophets had to put aside their writings and their readings and their prophesying, and they had to be warriors in those days. So even Barak was a warrior in those days, and I found him for you. It's all in Judges, and there's much more about what Barak was doing in those days. And you say, well, what does it have to do with now? Please don't bore me with this nonsense. What does this have to do with today? And he says he went down with 900 chariots of iron. Now, if you were one given over to symbolism, you could start doing numbers, and you could say, wait a minute, why is that war? Why does that number 900 ring true to me, right? What do you mean 900 chariots of iron? Let's count the number of aircraft that Barak is using, along with the French and the Italians and the Danes and the whoever else is sending weaponry over there, and let's add up the other weapons. Do they add up to 900? I mean, you want to go through this? There are people who would do this. I'm giving you a lead for your churches on Sunday. I'm giving priests out there and ministers out there something to play with on Sunday to get the people hooked back on the Bible. Because as I said to you before, the only thing that could save America is a great return to the biblical edicts and the biblical preachings. Otherwise, we're finished. That's all. We're going to be nothing. Nothing. We're already almost nothing. I think when I go to the across the river, you imagine when I can auction this off for with the Michael Savage's personal Bible with the post-its in it, and the money goes to some scholarship fund. That would be a big, that'd be a big thing on eBay. I get a lot of money for that one. There is nothing better for a man that he should eat and drink and make his soul enjoy pleasure for his labor. This also I saw that is from the hand of God. See, God tells you that. That's the thing about Jewishness. It's a lusty religion, number one, and it's also fundamentally connected to the body. This is something good about that. There is nothing better for a man than that he should eat and drink and make his soul enjoy pleasure for his labor. This also I saw that it is from the hand of God. For who will eat? Or who will enjoy if not I? This is again from Ecclesiastes. For to the man that is good in his, etc., you got the picture. Enjoy it, in other words. Then, of course, I could get into everything. There is a season. Boy, if we're not living through times that are tumultuous, where people are terrified of the baby in the White House, or shall we say the babe in the White House, who sets the world on fire and then goes a-dancing. You want to play Turn by the Birds? Because that fits right here. You can sing along. Stop right there. A time to kill and a time to heal. We have to eliminate this. We have to burn the Bible. We have to take Ecclesiastes and set it afire. All good Americans are now to report to their local police station with the Bible and make certain that they throw it into the fire, because it's so politically incorrect. It is so awful. It says this is a time to kill and a time to heal. That's not good. A time to love and a time to hate. Hating is bad. The children today are taught not to hit back. And that's why you can be stepped on by a third world nation that comes in here and steps on you and brainwashes your children. Play your turn again before I say something I regret. Go ahead. Make a pill. Take a psychiatric med. Here it comes.
A time to build up, a time to break down, a time to dance, a time to mourn, a time to cast away stones, a time to gather.
Listen to this in a minute.
And time to
see where I'm going.
A time of love, a time of hate, a time of war, a time of peace.
Okay, let's stop right there. A time to love, a time to hate, a time for war, and a time for peace. We're at war, and we have a babe running America. We have nation after nation declaring war on us. We have one nation after another spitting on us. We have a Navy turned into a diversity training vehicle. We have an Air Force that's been grounded. We have a military that's been told to take gay training on the battlefield. And we have a man celebrating Motown while all this is going on. Ladies and gentlemen, do you have any idea what I'm saying to you? I hope you do. Let's go to West Virginia. Barry, you're on the Savage Nation.
Hey, Michael. How are you doing? I was calling because I heard your story about Barack and Deborah.
Right.
And just wanted to add a little bit. Barack was actually a timid general, and he would not go into war until Deborah agreed to go with him.
Very interesting. So in this case, Deborah could be Hillary Clinton.
Hillary or perhaps another country, waiting until France would go with him. But Barack was—he didn't want to go into war. He was kind of held back. He was enjoying his life as a general, and he would only go when Deborah went. And Deborah said, "That's fine, but if we go into war, I'll go with you, but you won't be—you won't get the credit for it."
So I take it that you are a biblical a student of the Bible.
I try.
And what do you draw from the story of Deborah and Barack with regard to Barack Obama and the situation of today? Is there anything in that biblical prophecy that you think is relevant?
Well, I think it shows a point where leaders, for example, the general, where leaders are meant to lead and should stand out and to do their job and to lead in a way that's appropriate and in this case, lead in the way that the Lord intended for him to lead, and he refused to do that.
Mm-hmm. But don't you think it's a mark of a man who has disgraced the presidency to be traveling at a time like this? I don't know how else to put it. I think he's disgraced the office of the White House at this time with Japan, with Libya. How could the man come back and actually speak to the American people with a straight face?
I agree, and in the same case, the general, I think he's really abdicated his responsibility.
How could anybody refer to him as commander in chief with a straight face?
Well, being retired from the Army, it's tough. It would be tough.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate you listening so carefully to even hear a biblical reference I gave to Barack and Deborah from the Bible. I figure for those of you who read the Bible, the two listeners out of the 9 million who listen to the show, I think you'd enjoy it. There are three things which are too wonderful for me, four which I know not, the way of an eagle in the air, the way of a serpent upon a rock, the way of a ship in the midst of the sea, the way of a man with a young woman. That's from Proverbs.
Savage.
The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage. You're listening to an encore segment of Michael Savage.
What happened when Rome fell? I mean, what was life like? Because you say, well, Rome fell. What does it mean to you? There's one line I have to read to you from The Fall of Rome and the End of Civilization by Brian Ward Perkins. And they go, in other words, with the fall of the empire, art, philosophy, and decent drains all vanished from the West. Listen to what he wrote. After the empire fell, art collapsed, philosophy collapsed, and decent drains all vanished from the West. As you well know, art died in the United States of America circa, I would say, roughly 1950. There is no philosophy in the United States of America to speak of. There are ideas, but there are no schools of philosophy, so far as I know, that would be the equivalent of a school of philosophy of Aristotle or Plato. And then in terms of decent drains, take a look at the infrastructure of American cities. Coming back from any airport, especially here in the San Francisco area, you see highways where weeds are growing out of the pavement. You see potholes. I mean, I drive over the Golden Gate Bridge, and I marvel how an iconic structure such as this, which is such a powerful magnet for tourism, can have been permitted to fall into such disarray by the vermin who run this city and run the bridge is astounding to me. The roads are broken. There are potholes entering and coming off the bridge from San Francisco. And they rape and steal hundreds of millions of dollars a year from people with tolls, and no one knows where the Golden Gate Bridge tolls go. Why? Corruption. So again, we go back to this history. Why? History is a great instructor. Those who do not know their history are condemned to repeat it. And boy, oh boy, oh boy, are we repeating it. So again, I'll read that one line again to you. In other words, with the fall of the empire, art, philosophy, and decent drains all vanished from the West. As I said, there has been no art in America to speak of, no great art anyway, for at least 70 years. There's no philosophy that I can think of, maybe I'm wrong, and decent drains would refer to the infrastructure which vanished from the West. So in essence, the prognosis from Michael Savage is that we are witnessing not the coming death of a civilization, but the ongoing death of a civilization. Rome, you see, did not fall overnight. It took several hundred years for Rome to actually collapse completely. And this country is clearly in the throes of its death. These are the death throes of the United States of America. How else could you explain a president of this low caliber arriving in the White House? You remember I said to you that, what was it, the 1919 World Series were fixed by the gangster in New York. I forget his name. Does anyone remember? Arnold Rothstein fixed the 1918-1919 World Series. You say, how could you fix the World Series? He did so. Well, this election was fixed, in my estimation. It was rigged to put in a stooge of those who are destroying America. And it's a combination of elements that found this ultimate man, Barack Hussein Obama. He had the right exact mix of elements to slip through the American mind. And here we are 2 years into this reign of terror, and he's now doing what he does best, which is attacking the middle class, calling them the rich. Let me show you what communism is. I'm going to show you communism in a simple way. Many of you don't know what communism is. You think it has to be with a red beret. And there's a small supermarket near me that on Fridays past used to make fish sandwiches, fried fish that I liked a lot. It was really good fish. I called the market, and I said, do you have the fried fish sandwiches anymore? He said, no, we don't. I said, what happened? He said, the county health commissioner told us that the heat lamp we were using was too small, I started to scream into the phone. Those communist bastards, I said. They have a man making $100,000 a year with benefits, who has nothing better to do than to go to a supermarket and measure the size of a lamp when nobody ever complained about getting sick from a fish sandwich, while they let illegal aliens sell out of trucks, out of roach coaches, and they do nothing to them? And the man said, you're 100% right. What could we do about it? That's communism. Do you understand what communism is, fascism is? There's communism in your face, and it's here in the United States of America. It's not coming. It's here. This morning, I'll give you another example of what happened to England. England was once the land of the free and the home of the brave. You know what England is today? It's not the land of the free and the home of the brave. It's the land of the frightened and the home of the destitute totalitarians. Do you know what they did to a man in England? He sends me an email. He's a friend of mine from San Francisco who's allowed to enter England, and he went over there. And there's a story about a man who was taken out of his home in front of his kids and arrested because allegedly he wrote an email that contained a slur on gypsies when he didn't even write the email. They arrested him in England for an email he didn't even write. They took him to the police station, arrested him in front of his children for an email he didn't even write because the lousy bums in the Human Rights Commission in his town perceived his email to, in some ways, insult gypsies. Do you understand that that is communism? Do you understand that England has now become the ex-Soviet Union, that they're moving towards re-education camps, and then they're moving towards even worse than that? You say, well, why should you care? Why should you care? Because Obama is part of that internationalist movement. Don't you understand that?
Savage.
I went to an event in San Francisco. It was a pathetic event filled with the lowest of the low liberals. You have never seen such out-of-town people. I've never seen anything like it in my life. I don't know what they're doing to the DeYoung Museum, but whoever's running this should be fired because they've taken a first-class institution, they're turning it into something that's an addendum to the Garment Center. The last three major exhibits are about clothing and dresses. I've never seen anything like, how do they wreck a museum like this? Who are these fadus from Pacific Heights who take a great museum filled with great art and fill it with dresses and then bring in third-rate junk artists from New York to put them on mannequins and call this an exhibit? Anyway, I invited a congressman to join us at our table with a few friends, and he's a very interesting man, a very fine man. He's from another state. I had to go out of state to get a congressman, by the way. I don't have any representation. You talk about taxation without representation. My congressman, even though I live in California, is from Texas, to give you some idea. The communists run this state, as you well know. So he's there with me, flew out just to be with me. He just loves me so much, and I respect him so much. So he says, hey, Mike, how do you take these people? He looked around at this crowd with their dresses and this and that. And he said, well, let's take a walk around and look at everyone having their wine before the dinner. And he said, you know what we call this in Texas? I said, what? He said, this is Indian country. He said, let's take a stroll through Indian country. So, you know, I had one or two good moments there. But you have never seen such hypocrisy and such provincialism as you would have seen last night. It would take a veritable Voltaire to properly describe the low level of these people. They gave a speech about the dresses on display, and a guy had the nerve to quote Reader's Digest as a source of great esteem for this exhibit. The man quoted Reader's Digest. This is the chief fundraiser there. And they cheered him. These goofballs. Now, you say, why are you wasting our time here to 8 to 10 million listeners talking about a museum event, Mike? Because these are the people who have destroyed America. These are the psychopath drug addicts across America who are either on prescription drugs or other drugs who don't know what the hell is going on around them, and they're dangerous. And they're the ones who put Obama in power. This is Nancy Pelosi's backyard. That's all I can say to you.
Savage.
People are protesting down there. They're saying that there are no toilets. Which, you know...
The families
around Zuccotti Park don't like
it. Well, they should chip in and buy some toilets. Toilets are cheap. Porta-potties are cheap. I don't want to be nailed because I said porta-potty. I'll send the porta-potties down.
Okay, that's a good idea. Don't put me in this with you.
Well, don't you put...
Today, on the way to the radio station, I stopped and had lunch in one of my favorite places. I haven't been there for months. I was craving a high cholesterol lunch. I am so sick and tired of watching my diets. I ducked into a German bar I know, and I ate, I don't know, I ate pounds of meat. I was craving meat. Secondly, there's a lot of conflicting evidence on the cholesterol issue. It's one of the most important topics that I never talk about. I'll do it another time. It's not well understood, but it's really not the amount of cholesterol you consume. Cholesterol is very beneficial, incidentally. This is one of the greatest shams in the history of medicine, this low cholesterol and this use of Lipitor. It's crazy, the whole thing. And I know what I'm speaking of because I've studied it for 40 years. And the evidence does not support lowering your cholesterol to reduce your risk of heart attack, incidentally. However, I mean, I wanted a high meat diet, so I had this huge meat diet. And I'm coming out of the restaurant literally feeling much better. All of my anxiety was gone. I mean, your food can be a phenomenal sedative, incidentally. Lean diets produce people who are, you know, skittish liberals, people who eat, you know, vegan, vegetarian. They think they're healthy. Half of them are crazy half of the time. They're deficient in nutrients. They're deficient in iron. They're deficient in carnitine. They're deficient in many nutrients, and they don't understand why their perceptions are the way they are. Nevertheless, I go through the Embarcadero Center, which is an upscale, you know, office set of office towers, and there's some, you know, men's stores in there that I don't see many people shopping in, and they're having a crazy sidewalk sale. Like high-end goods, like, are in carts, and it says no reasonable offer refused, and it will take any price, best price. So this is, like, right up my alley because I grew up, you know, as I said, poor, where you bargain for things. I felt like I was in a souk in the Middle East or back on Ludlow Street in New York back when I was a kid. Well, you know, it was astonishing. So I start rifling through the shirts and the belts. I don't know what I was doing, but I got caught up in the frenzy of it. And I saw a pair of gorgeous gloves. So the guy says to me, they're deerskin gloves. I said, how much do you want? He said, they're $85. I said, I'll give you 10. He says, 20. I said, 10. He said, I'll take it. So I have these deerskin gloves that are too big for me, but they're beautiful. Maybe I'll give them to someone who I know with big hands. Then I happen to need a new briefcase. I have one old briefcase that's 20 years old. I tend to buy nothing new. One is leather and one is incredible high-end nylon. He says, okay, originally $395 each. I'll give you $125 for one. I said, how about $200 for both? He said, no, that's too low. I said, $200 for both, or I'm walking and I pull out the cash. All right, I'll take it. Now, I don't know that I necessarily need these. I have an old briefcase that I got from a radio station I used to work at 15 years ago that refuses to break. It's made of some junky synthetic fiber. I throw it, I drop it, I fling it, I use it, I sit on it, I sleep on it, but I'm tired of it. So now I have two brand new briefcases. So as I'm leaving, I say to the guy, I said, hey, look, there's no sales receipt. I said, it looks like I just shoplifted these things. He said, it sure does. It sure does. He said, I won't tell a cop that you stole it. I said, I didn't steal it. I said, does everyone agree here that I paid for these? Did everyone see me give them the money? So what I'm telling, I had a good time, in other words. I ate a meal that violated my normal diet. I bargained for briefcases. What could be better? The air is so beautiful here in San Francisco. I mean, you could see why real estate is so high in the Bay Area. It's probably the best climate in the whole world. And so, as I say, I mean, I love the city, and I just ignore the politics. There's a certain area of the city I like better than any other, which is the old red brick buildings around, you know, for 1850, 60, 70 era, the old time of the post-Civil War period. Amazing, amazing area of the city that I love. So here I am. So, as I say, there's a lot to be seen if you open your eyes, and you can ignore the politics of the city. You think I listen to what half of these gas bags say? Never. And Nancy Pelosi is a product of this lunacy. Here we are. And it's a city like any others. It's a mixed bag, you know, the good, the bad, and the indifferent. Somebody wants to know about my dog, so I'm going to take a dog call. Jason in Albany, New York, welcome to the program.
Hey, Dr. Savage, it's an honor to talk to you. I have no idea how you do what you do every day, but I wanted to kick it down a notch, and we want to know about Teddy because you haven't talked to him about him in a while.
What can I say about my poodle? He sleeps at my feet and loves red meat. I just gave you a haiku. He sleeps at my feet and loves red meat. There's nothing more I can say. He's the most loyal friend I have ever had, and I've had dogs since I'm a little boy. I have never encountered a breed like this. The dog is as close to a simian as a canine can be. He disarticulates his rear legs and stands on his rear feet. All you got to do is bring out provolone cheese. He may have some Italian in him, because if I bring out provolone cheese, the dog walks on his rear legs and dances around the kitchen like a trained bear for that little piece of cheese. It's astounding to watch. He can walk on his... I don't know, a lot of dogs can do it, I guess. He moans at night in bed like a baby. Sometimes he has a little convulsion. Did you know that little dogs sometimes have a slight nervous thing where they start to go, but you know that you can soothe them just like a person if you just hold them for a moment?
It brings you back to reality. And what do you do? Do you do anything special nutritionally other than feeding them back?
I'll tell you exactly what I feed my dog. He's 7 years old, and I'm a little, you know, I'm sad already. I didn't realize time flew like this. I heard that a dog at 9 is considered a senior pet. So I've been talking to him now, like, differently. I start to say, you're soon going to be my senior pet. And I treat him a little differently now because he's almost a senior. And I look at him already. I look at the other one in the box with the ashes, the Snowy that I had for 13 years. She was amazing. I never talk about it because I wasn't on radio then, actually. I don't think. Well, I was. Snowy was a Sheltie, a small collie. Oh, did I love her. But, you know, in the blink of an eye, she went from the children being young and jumping over, like, little barriers in a park, like Lassie, with me saying, Snowy, Snowy. And there she'd run in this beautiful meadow and jump over a log to dying on a grass lawn with no light in her eye, shriveled up like a person. I mean, what are you going to do? It's the way of all flesh. And I think that's why we love our animals, because the process is speeded up with them, and we see our own self in them, right or wrong?
I totally agree with you 100%, and it's amazing that.
But this is the delicate, precious thing about life itself. I hate to get maudlin, but the fact is that we all, in every breath we take, recognize that this is a very short dance in the sun. Any adult comes to understand that at a certain point, that you're not a Lindsay Lohan who thinks you can just get stoned for the rest of your life. It's a short dance in the sun. You know, take a deep breath, because we're all on the same ship called the Earth at the same time.
Savage.
You're listening to an encore segment of Michael Savage.
Give you a quote, okay? And here it is. The position is ridiculous, the relief momentary, and the cost abominable. Now, I'm not talking about talk radio. The position is ridiculous, the relief momentary, and the cost abominable. He was, of course, talking about relations between man and woman, I assume, and that was Lord Chesterfield, who lived several hundred years ago, born in 1694 and died in 1773, quite a wit, British statesman, and very funny. I was quoting this all weekend with a few people that I ran into, and they really got a kick out of it. I don't know anyone who wouldn't laugh at that. The position is ridiculous, the relief momentary, and the cost abominable. Women especially get a kick out of that one. They look back on their husbands. And then they get stuck. So I looked up Lord Chesterfield, and I was looking at some of his other quotes, and you say, hundreds of years ago, you know, what good is that now, right? Well, I'm going to read you some of them. I never do this. Are you ready for this? Let's see. An injury is much sooner forgotten than an insult. Hey. As fathers commonly go, it is seldom a misfortune to be fatherless. And considering the general run of sons, as seldom a misfortune to be childless. I think it's cute. Let's see. Distrust all those who love you extremely upon a very slight acquaintance and without any visible reason. That would be Madoff, right? Distrust all those who love you extremely upon a very slight acquaintance and without any visible reason. Remember the America? Oh, I love you, man. Remember the 60s? I love you. Remember all those politicians who would say, I love you, or the entertainers at the end of a show, I love you. Remember those? Let's see what else. Good humor is the health of the soul. Sadness is its poison. You know, for years of my life, mainly when I was a teenager, no, a late adolescent, early manhood thing, I used to read aphorisms of intelligent people. I thought that it would make me smarter. None of them worked. Absolutely none of them worked, by the way. Aphorisms don't work. The only thing that works is some money in your pocket. You quote Michael Savage on that one. A weak mind is like a microscope, which magnifies trifling things but cannot receive great ones. Does anyone read aphorisms anymore? The day is over. I see people walking around with their Blackberries, looking in their palm all the time. They're like morons. They're like idiots walking around. They're like bumblebees that have been sprayed with Raid. They walk down a street in bizarre, zigzaggy fashion, looking in their palm like it's the Holy Grail. This has to come to an end, this phase, don't you think? You think that the cell phone, the wireless device thing is going to come to an end where people are going to eschew them and start becoming humans again? You like sitting at dinner with someone who has a cell phone on the table? They put it down next to the napkin? I don't know about you, but I don't want to eat dinner. I tell them either shut it off or I'm leaving. You know, I don't really want to sit with someone they're texting underneath the table. I'm just bringing stuff up, that's all. Things that bother me. A novel must be exceptionally good to live as long as the average cat, Lord Chesterfield. None of these are as good as that one, though. The position is ridiculous, the relief momentary, and the cost abominable. That's his best. That's the only one he's remembered for. So I'm looking at your favorite, quote, authors, you know, like they're showing on this list of people who've said things that we should remember. Abraham Lincoln, Albert Einstein, Benjamin Franklin. Then they list in with them. The people they put in there like Maya Angelou, you hear? You never heard of Maya Angelou. What is she doing in there? I don't understand this. They put people I never heard of in there. Where's Michael Savage? Liberalism is a mental disorder. That's a quote that should live through the ages. But since the liberals control all of these sites, you won't see it anywhere. You know what I mean? Mark Twain. He's in the same category as her? Mark Twain, they put in the same list as Maya Angelou, Obama's favorite non-poet. Unbelievable to me. Yogi Berra, they put in the same list with William Shakespeare. Unbelievable the kind of idiocy that passes for intelligence today. I'm getting blind from watching TV at night. I'll tell you the truth. It's a great relaxation for me. You know what's the most underestimated health promoter in the world? I'll tell you, television, in a certain way. And you say, come on, Mike, you must be kidding. No, I don't mean cable news. I'm telling you that I found a long time ago, you know, I'm going back to like the 70s when they were bumper stickers, and I found one once on a refrigerator somewhere, I don't know where. It said, when in doubt, get horizontal. You know those cute sayings, right? I swear it works for me every time. If I get stressed out, I go in a dark room, usually my bedroom, I lock the door, load the guns, release the dogs around the property, and I watch a movie. Or I lay in the dark, a dark room for 20 minutes. It's the most restful thing I could do is lie in a dark room. I learned this a long time ago, is cut out all input into your brain. You know your brain uses up about 20% of the blood sugar energy in your body at any one time? You didn't know that much, you know, energy requires to think. So anyway, I don't want to talk about health, you know what I'm saying. What's the point? You look at Nat Geo, what's the point of living altogether? That's why I don't believe in it. I say, how could you, as a trained scientist with a PhD from the University of California, how could you say you don't believe in Nat Geo's view of the world? 29 million years ago, 46 million years ago, 180 million years ago, there was nothing but muck. And out of the muck, there crawled a distinctly ugly, smelly little creature that had no head, nothing but a tail that slithered out. And the next thing you knew, here we are. I'll tell you why I don't believe that's true. Now, I studied evolution. Here we go again. This is as good as Ron Paul callers or Bertha calls, but I don't want to deal with this. Because I do lay awake at night and say, what's the point of struggling if in the eons of history, millions of years, why should I motivate myself anymore? I've written all these books. I've achieved all these things. I've climbed all these mountains. What am I doing this for? What am I trying to prove? Who cares what I do anyway? And so you go back to all this vanity, right? I think it's Ecclesiastes wrote, all his vanity. I knew him personally. He wasn't a bad guy. He could make a good corned beef sandwich at the same time he had philosophy that wasn't bad as well. He'd make you a sandwich and tell you all his vanity. Old Ecclesiastes ran a great deli in old Palestine. But the point I'm making is there can be evolution as a concept coexisting with the creation of man and all of the animals on the earth by God. I had this discussion once with a religious scholar on this show who really floored me with his answer. He was extremely religious. And he said, Michael, it says in the Bible, and God created the world in 7 days. How could you believe that, people say, unless you were a child or a Republican? I mean, that's the joke that goes around in, you know, snotty liberal circles where all their children wind up drug addicts, okay, or behaving like Charlie Sheen. They wonder why. You raise a child without any belief. You know what the child's going to wind up doing? They're going to believe in drugs. They're going to believe in alcohol. They're going to believe in rampant sexuality. Because if you don't believe in anything, if you don't believe there are any consequences or any meaning to your life, what do you think a child's going to do? A child must be given a religious upbringing, a belief in something. I don't say become a fanatic, okay? That's how I see it. So anyway, so he said to me that our concept of time is different than God's sense of time. And so when God said, and the world was created in 7 days, a day to God could have been 10 million years. A day to God could have been a million years. So it could mean, and God created the world in 7 million years. Or God created the world in 70 million years. And I said, you know what? Even though the numbers don't really work or add up, I'll take it. Since it's all a mystery, listen to how my logical mind works. My highly developed, super evolved mind, look how it works. Even though that answer is incomplete, and even though that answer is not intellectually perfect, I'll take it. How do you like that? I don't go for the Nat Geo we started from a worm crawling in the ground. I'm sorry. May you speak for yourself, Johnson. If you think you descended from a worm, good luck to you. Now I know why you behave that way. 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. I'm just having a good time today. I told you something's wrong. I think I know what it is. Instead of eating bread for breakfast, I had broccoli. I know you say, well, how'd you get there? And I tried something new. I said, you know, you wrote all these books on nutrition, right? Well, go back to eating living foods and whole foods. I mean, they're not crazy. You wrote books about this years ago. You know, when I started to analyze virtually everything I eat is dead. Everything I eat is dead. Everything I eat is like emaciated and dead and disgusting. The chicken is like a gray thing in a package before I cook it. It's been there. My relatives, I was a little boy in the Catskill Mountains. They go to a live poultry market, which you still see in Chinatown, by the way. One of the reasons I love walking through the Chinatown of San Francisco is that many of the Chinese remind me of my relatives when I was younger. You know, yelling at each other in a butcher market. No, I don't want that chicken. Yo, keep that chicken. I want that chicken. I saw the same thing going on when I was a kid. The women wouldn't pick the shrimpy little chicken that was depressed in the back complaining of allergies. They wanted that chicken that strutted and ran away from the butcher with the axe. That's the chicken they wanted. It's terrible. And you'd see these women knock the chicken's head off and it would run without a head with the blood spurting out. It was horrible as a child to watch that. As a city boy, I got to tell you, the women didn't blink. It didn't mean nothing to them. And then they ripped the feathers out and you take it home. Now, that was a live chicken. I guarantee it didn't eat antibiotics either. They didn't even know what an antibiotic was in those days. So I realized that I actually grew up on whole foods in a strange way. And now, of course, virtually everything I eat is this, that, packaged. So no wonder we feel denatured and we don't have much energy. So although I tend to eat a lot of organic food as often as possible at home anyway, all my fruit's organic, all my vegetables are organic, blah, blah, blah. Hippie chickens I get with the degrees. No this, no that. But they're still old in the package, right? So I decided, you know what? Bread slows you down. You love bread. My mother loved bread. She lived to 88. Don't give me this no-carb business. Stop being a fool. Okay? You know, bread is the staple of life. You gotta be realistic here. Stop with the idiocy. I see people eating diets. You can't believe it. No wonder they look the way they do, and they need medication. But I decided to eat a little less bread, so I substituted steamed broccoli for breakfast. I feel so good, I'm frightened. I feel like Buddy Hackett when he went in the Army, I told you. I don't understand it. I don't have a headache. I don't have a sinus problem. I feel optimistic. This is bad.
Savage.
Let's go to the Savage Nation callers. Helen in Georgia, you make the show. Go ahead, please.
Hey, Dr. Savage. What a privilege to speak with you. I am calling you because I recall your story when you talked about your angel intercedence, the black angel, the person that was almost going to run you over with a bicycle.
Oh, my God. I was just stepping off the curb on the Embarcadero in San Francisco, and a bicyclist was speeding in the wrong direction, almost killed me. I got into a shouting match with him, and the thug was coming towards me with evil intent when a black angel appeared on the street and intervened and tried to speak reason to the two men and then disappeared into the air. I remember that very well. So tell me why you're thinking of that tonight.
I'm calling because when you told that story, I have a book. There's a woman here that claims that angels come to her and she sketches them. And in this book that I have is a picture of a black angel, kind of like a Jimi Hendrix looking thing with sort of some white flecks, you know, and the big hair.
I swear to God, he looked like Jimi Hendrix and he had white flecks in his hair. Remember I said that?
Yes, I do. And if I can get an address, I'll make
it. Wow. No, I believe that angels exist. I swear to you. I know I'm a man with a science background and all. I have reason to believe angels exist. I know the devil exists. I just turned the TV on. There they are with lipstick and high heels and the eyes. I swear to you. Yeah. Stay on the line. Guys, give her the address for the Talk Radio Network office. I want to see that picture. Can I tell you a quick side story about an angel? I know you don't want to hear it. I got to tell you this. I'm trying to, like, divorce it, though, of the actual people because I don't want to embarrass them. Okay, I'll start with a stranger told someone I know that she was giving birth in a hospital, and during the most difficult moments of her pregnancy, a nun appeared. Her name was Mother. She helped soothe the woman who was giving birth and then disappeared from the waiting room thereafter. And a day later, when the woman, you know, was recovering with her baby, she asked who the nun was, and they said to her, there was no nun here. I will tell you that I heard the very same story from another woman within my own family, and that we looked for that woman named Mother, and she was nowhere to be found. And I'll tell you another story about a nun. I was in the hospital last year with a rather minor nothing, but it scared me anyway. CAT scan, blah, blah, blah. In the recovery room, there came a nun who was very kind to me. And when I got out of the emergency room, she was leaving. She was in the parking lot. I ran after her. I ran up to her. And I said to her, who are you? What is your name? Can I help you? I reached for the money in my pocket. I offered to give her whatever I had in my pocket. She wouldn't take it. I said, where can I reach you? And she gave me the name of a nunnery somewhere. I don't know where she was. I called it. They never heard of her. You think we're all crazy? Think about it and get back to me.
We can't wait for Congress to do its job. So where they won't act, I will. And that's why in recent weeks we've been taking a series of executive actions. We decided we couldn't stop. We couldn't just wait for Congress to fix No Child Left Behind. We went ahead and decided let's give states the flexibility they need to meet higher standards for our kids and improve our schools.
Did you hear that? And it's organizations like the AARP who control these leftist politicians. AMAC is fighting back. The Association of Mature American Citizens. Your membership can help stop the left wing. Call 800-255-4199, 800-255-4199, or go to americaisrising.com, 800-255-4199, americaisrising.com.
Savage.
Talk radio is still dominant in terms of the world of political ideas in this country. I did it on this show. It was done nowhere else. We kept hearing talk radio is this, talk radio is that. It's only for old people. Talk radio is dead. Cable news is king. Internet is king. I don't say they don't have a powerful influence. You got to be a fool not to say so. At this stage, though, you'd have to admit, no matter how much of a doubting Thomas you are, that Michael Savage has rescued talk radio from the gallows. Talk Radio Network, an independent syndicator. I work with the best team in talk radio. They know me. They're like my friends, all the guys in the back room. It's unbelievable to me. This is a family. This is a team. We are the Yankees of talk radio. If anyone out there has been doubting whether talk radio still is powerful, let me tell you something. It is more powerful today than it ever has been in my 16-year career. Much more powerful today. More listeners than ever. More influence than ever. That's if you're in the inner ring. If you're in the inner ring, you have an audience that needs you and listens to you. And if you make sense, well, you're gonna make a lot of friends and a lot of unhappy people too. I wouldn't use the word enemies because we don't yet live in North Korea.
Savage.
Last night was an example of the liberals dancing at the back on the back deck of the Titanic. I never saw such out-of-town people pretending to be such high art people in my life. My flesh crawled. We all left early. No, and Teddy was not allowed there, even though his gray suit would have been a great tuxedo. He was not allowed in. He probably would have been a great addition to the event, believe me. But anyway, the reason I'm talking about what's going on to our great museums, and they are wonderful institutions of Western civilization. I saw this crap happening 20 years ago with all of the exhibits that started to come in, the 10th-rate garbage. But now it's reached an apogee, a low point, where they're actually bringing out trunk shows of old dresses from storehouses and calling it a museum exhibit. How do they get excited over this? And you should have seen the women with the gowns they were marching around. It was unbelievable to me. Then there's an old Secretary of State who shows up. Every time he shows up, the guy can hardly move. He was a good secretary. Wherever he shows up in this city, the cameras break out like the King of England just arrived. He's dazed, doesn't know what he's doing. Oh, here comes the head of the class walked in. What a provincial. You really would need to be Voltaire to write this correctly. And I'm Voltaire. I'm the new Voltaire because in my book, Abuse of Power, which will come out in September, August, September from St. Martin's Press, it's about attempted terrorist attack in America that my hero stops with his ex-Vietnam vet guys in the book. It's fantastic. It's unbelievable. One of the key scenes is set in a museum at a black tie dinner, almost exactly like the one I just went to. And you'll see the Voltairean aspects of my abilities when it comes out. I will be the talk of the town. Trust me on that one. But out of town, like you cannot believe, provincial, the museums are being destroyed in the country the same way the country's being destroyed, gutted from within by people who think they're so superior. What are they all on, medication? Is that it? I mean, you look at their children, half of them are drug addicts or in psychopath in homes for the psychos. Not one of their children has ever amounted to anything. All they know how to do is wear $3,000 belts. They're on all medication. The kids are all ruined.
Savage.